Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Massive Match Day podcast. We are presented, as always, by our good friends at the Land Grant Brewing Company, as well as by the Old North Arcade. My name is Chris. His name is Nathaniel. We have a lot to cover this week, so we're going to jump right into it. In one of the weirdest ways to start a homestand I can think of, Crew SC come out flat, take control of the match, then fall apart late on. Not the way you want to start a three-match homestand. Nate, let's break this down kind of sure. Beginning, middle, end here. Crew SC start off slow for the sixth time this year. I did an article on this yesterday. Sixth time this season, Crew SC have conceded the first goal. Four of those have come before the 15-minute mark.
Wow.
What happened this week? And then we'll kind of break down how big of a problem is this. But what happened this week, first of all?
This week, there was a huge gap between offensive midfield and defensive midfield. And in the defensive transition, Abu was the closest to the man on the ball. That was Maxi Morales. And instead of closing him down, he was way too passive and let him gain 20, 25 yards of space. And Abu is the only player in that area. So I can't wholesomely blame Abu, because I have to blame the system as well for allowing such a large gap as the defense backed off entirely. But in defensive transition, you have to put pressure on the ball. And Abu failed to do that, trapped in, step up, and the ball found its way to Harrison, and he made a nice play.
Putting pressure on the ball in transition is almost a building block level error. Like, that is a building block of how you put together your team, especially when you're a team that bombed forward. Do you think that the Abu not stepping, you think so the him and Trapp both playing similar defensive roles, do you think there was some confusion caused by that? Do you think that contributed to why he didn't step forward, or was it just kind of a brain fart by Abu?
I think so. I think that Trapp and Abu are two similar players, and it's a similar issue, not entirely, but it's close to the issue that we had with Mohamed Saeed and Trapp playing together last year. As they played together more, started to work a little bit better. But if you remember early in the season, after I believe Chani got hurt, after Chani got hurt and those two played together for a while, there was a little bit of confusion on who should step up, who should stay back, and their specific roles, because they're used to playing a similar type role.
Now, it's interesting to me that throughout this season, like I said, six times they've conceded first, four of them in the first 15 minutes. You would think that with a trend like that, there would be similar causes to each goal. But looking at the different goals, sometimes it's a defensive miscue, such as this past week, sometime, or when Awful let the runner in behind the week before. Other times it is a bad turnover, such as in Houston. So there's not really one area to address. It's a mentality thing. And Will Trapp spoke to that in practice. He said something I found interesting. He said they might even be coming out too aggressively and trying to take it to the other team too much, and they might need to step back and kind of play their way into games more. I don't know how to feel about the captain saying that, because you want your team to come out and play aggressive, but
especially
at home. But 2/3 of the games this year, you have conceded the early goal, so maybe that is something that should be toned down a little. Can you be too aggressive out of the gates?
Oh, absolutely, you can. And we see that being characteristic of some teams entirely. I don't think it's been a huge issue with Crew SC. I don't think they've been overly aggressive. I think that maybe some of the attacking players get too far forward. The attacking midfielders sometimes get too far forward, and the defense isn't supporting enough. Likewise, I think that maybe we see where the forwards are not dropping back into defense as quick as they should. So I think it's a little bit of a cohesion issue, and especially those transition areas. And this team has struggled with that for over a year.
When I asked Coach Berhalter about the team conceding first so routinely, he chose again, I asked him a couple weeks ago, and he chose again to focus more on his side's response. He mentioned they fell behind to Toronto and Portland and came back to win those games. And they came back to take a lead in this one as well before falling apart late. Does coming back to take the lead in this game erase the bad start in this game? And on the whole, how concerned are you that the team is still conceding so early, even though they're above the league average and getting back into games?
It doesn't erase it. It's good that the team has shown the mental fortitude to come back after conceding so early, because with some players, some teams, that can put them in a slouch for the rest of the game. I think that they've done that well, but it doesn't erase the fact that they've conceded early. And that's a statistic that is, I would say, you know, extra normal. It's not a statistic that's consistent with the rest of the league. It's something that this team is struggling with. And I think to ignore that is to ignore the present situation. Maybe for Berhalter, he doesn't want to address that in the media. I think that's entirely possible. He wants his team to, you know, seem strong, have a good word out there, etc. But I think from our perspective, I see it as an issue that needs to be fixed.
Yeah, I think, and I said this in the article, which you can read on massivereport.com if you haven't already. It's awesome. I said in the article, it's the coach's prerogative to emphasize the positive, especially after, you know, some shade being thrown at him over his handling of Kakuta Mane in Andrew King's MLS article last week. I'm sure he just wants to emphasize the positive and put the happy face on things as best he can. Moving on from the slow start, the team did rally again, as they did against Portland, as they did against Toronto. They ended up taking the lead in this one. How'd they turn it around?
Well, after the halftime break, they seemed to have a little bit more of a life in them. After the first goal by Pippa in the first half, they seemed to create some good chances but failed really to convert on any of them. There was a lot of goal-scoring chances. I thought Merrim in particular was particularly wasteful. And then I think in the second half, came out, had a great, great press, and Ola Kamara got that goal. It was awesome. But after that, they started to let it fall again.
There was a lot left on the table in that first half, and it's kind of it's an old ghost coming back to haunt, because finishing has historically been a problem for this Crew team under Berhalter. It hasn't been as big of a problem this year, but it definitely reared its ugly head. If Crew SC score another goal or even two, like, there were multiple opportunities left on the table. We're having a very different conversation today and all this week. I was interested in, as you said, Merrim, who's had a fantastic start to the year, was not at his best in this game, and I think the team suffered for that, and I think you saw that. The second goal came very early in the second half, as you alluded to. Berhalter had another interesting thing to say about that. He said he felt his team almost scored too early in the second half, that it kind of kick-started New York and heaped pressure on themselves. That kind of rings hollow for me. Like, I don't know if that's another trying to put a positive spin on it or what, but the idea of scoring too early in the half, if you score early in the half and then somehow that invites pressure on you immediately thereafter, that's a mentality issue for you. You know, there is such a thing as inviting pressure on yourself by sitting back and defending, but that doesn't really become a legitimate excuse until we're in the 75th minute on, I feel. Saying in the 50th minute or so that you're inviting pressure on yourself because you scored too early, that doesn't fly with me.
Yeah, I have to agree with you there. I think that is, I don't know, a bit of an escape. I think that, again, it is probably him trying to put a positive note out there. I think he's trying to portray, you know, positive note for his players, for his coaching staff, who maybe hear his comments, etc. Maybe morale hasn't been great, and this is his way of trying to boost it. I'm not sure. I can't entirely blame him for trying to keep a positive note, but in the same sense, I don't find it totally realistic.
You know, I agree with you. I don't know if I'd go so far as saying morale seemed low. Every time I've been at training, there I haven't seen any signs of that, so I don't want to.
Sure. It was more me hypothesizing.
Right. I don't want to give the impression that I have observed that, because I haven't. But, you know, just Greg Berhalter talks about wanting to play his way and wanting to play the Cruz style and be an offensive team, a possession-based team. And, you know, if you're going to be a good attacking team in any league in the world, if you get a goal early in the second half to take a lead, you step on the throat. And this team didn't step on the throat. So, you know, and I don't necessarily think that's a Berhalter call, because I having gotten to go to training a few times, interacted with Greg a little, my opinion on him has changed a little. The guy obviously knows his stuff. He knows a lot about soccer. It oozes out of him when he's talking. So I'm forced to wonder, who pumped the brakes for Crew SC out there on the field? Where does this kind of, I don't want to say slacking off, but losing that attacking impetus, losing that edge, where does that start? Is that an Higuain thing, because he's kind of the engine that makes it run? Is it a Kamara or a Finley Merriam situation, because they're the ones pressing high? I didn't get to go back and watch the game as much as I would like. I only got to take in the highlights for my second viewing. But I just couldn't put my finger on it. But somewhere there was a disconnect, and there was a pumping of the brakes, so to speak. And I just, for the life of me, can't figure out how and why that happens.
It's a loss to me, too. I don't agree with it. I feel that most teams should play fairly consistent throughout the match. Yes, they should make changes tactically, etc. But from what we've seen from this team, from what I've seen from all the soccer that I've watched and played, there are a lot of times where, like in the second half, the team goes up 2-1. And afterwards, they seem to, right, like you said, lose that attacking impetus a little bit. Why? You don't have a comfortable cushion. You're up one goal. There's a lot of time left. It's going back to kind of what Berhalter was saying. You score too early, and then what after that? I think after that, you keep attacking. You keep playing your game. And I think a little bit the team stopped maybe taking those extra chances. And I feel that the team needs to continue to attack. They're not comfortable at 1-0, or 2-1 in this case. But I want to see that edge throughout the entire game.
And I do just want to reiterate, I don't believe for one second that was a Berhalter decision to take the foot off the gas. Something to watch in future games, for sure. Another storyline that emerged throughout the game, Greg waited a long time to make subs. The subs didn't come till, I believe, the 81st minute or so. It was a double sub, Hansen and Kakutamane warning Claxon. Kakutamane makes his Crew debut coming on. Greg Berhalter was asked directly if he waited too long to sub, and he said, yeah, he owned up to it. He said he, in retrospect, hindsight being 2020, he should have subbed earlier, given his team a lift a little earlier on. What did you see from Kakutamane? Did you see anything from Kakutamane in this situation, or was it just not enough time to really tell?
I thought he was pretty good. I'd say compared to Nico Hansen, who came on at the same time, I'd say that Mane definitely had more chances, was better on the ball. But out of him, we didn't get a chance to see much. I think he had 4 attempted passes, completed 3 of them, had 2 shots, one of which was on target. He played for all of like 10 minutes. That's not much to really get a solid sample.
Crew fall apart late on, concede 2 goals, and they end up losing a game that they fought back to get ahead in. It's concerning, considering New York City did not have either of their 2 marquee players in David Villa or Andrea Pirlo out on the pitch. Villa didn't even suit up. He was ill. It's a bad loss. It can't really be written off as anything but a bad loss at this point, I feel. You know, you look at the Red Bull game where the injuries kind of unraveled everything so early, and we talked last week about being just kind of like, well, yeah, that sucked, but what can we do? We move on. This one, I feel, is it's hard to swallow.
I agree. It's tough, like you said, without the David Villas and Andrea Pirlos. I think partially this NYCFC team showed that they can play without their 2 star players. And overall, they did put a good showing in. I don't want to discredit their play at all because I thought it was pretty good. Defensively, their pressure was on point. Offensively, they converted when given half chances. So I think they played really well all together. However, it wasn't the strongest team out there, and we need to see more from Columbus.
And that's really what it comes down to. You want to see a team with such obvious attacking talent. You know, we've seen goals coming from multiple areas so far this year. We've seen Kamara score. We've seen Merrim playing amazingly. Higuain had his best game of the season. You've seen Hansen make an impact. We know what Ethan Finley's capable of. There are weapons here, and it's just really disheartening to see that kind of collapse laid on. But the good news is there are two more home games, two winnable home games coming up, and you got to kind of look at them as must-win at this point.
Yeah, well, we have New England Revolution coming up this weekend, and it's going to bring Kai Kamara back to town.
So possibly.
Possibly. He was out, for those of you that didn't know or didn't watch, the game against the Sounders. The Revs tied 3-3. They went up really early in the game. I think they had three goals by the 35th minute. However, fell apart in the second half. And the Sounders came back to pull a 3-3 draw at home in Seattle. Now, Kai Kamara didn't feature in the match. His wife was having a baby. So if he is back this match against Columbus, obviously emotions are going to be high because it's against his former team here in Columbus. He's going to be in front of the Nordica fans. And he, after just having a kid, he has that extra motivation to do well. So I think that storyline is going to be interesting. And this is definitely a winnable game for Columbus, but they got to do better than they did against NYCFC.
Speaking of bringing children into the world, congratulations to Harrison Offal, one of our own. His wife and he had a baby boy this week, so he was not at the training session I attended because he was with her. So congratulations to the Offals. But yeah, as you said, New England coming to town. New England haven't been great this year. I haven't got a chance to take in much of their season, but from what I can tell, they are not hitting the levels that Revolutions of the past have. Greg Berhalter, Ethan Finley both spoke about them this week at training. Couple new center backs for them, but besides that, a very familiar-looking New England team. Do you kind of know what you're going to get with this New England team? You know, you've got Kai Kamara, theoretically, as the target man, Juan Agudelo. You know, remember when he was the next big thing, he's still a good young striker. And then you've got Lee Gwynn, you know, kind of being the playmaker and pulling the strings. What do you expect to see from this New England team?
Well, they play a diamond in midfield. Diego Fagundes has generally been either at the top of that or out wide. It's possible we'll see Wynn at the top with Kai Kamara coming back. He did play up front against the Sounders. Juan Agudelo will be up there with Kamara. And they have a lot of striking power. All those guys, all four of them, are, you know, pretty good finishers, pretty good on the ball. Fagundes is really adept with the ball at his feet. Lee Wynn can create, and Agudelo and Kamara can score. The issue they've had is cohesiveness in front of the net. They've been that team that they won't really get many chances inside the 18-yard box. They'll pass it around a bit and maybe get a few half chances, but they're not building solid attacking opportunities. For as many striking guys that they have out there, it's kind of been a shame because this attack should be really strong. Now, they've shown it last week that they can put up three goals. So they have that power in front of net, but it really depends if the team's going to show up or not.
And Crew SC have not had the most stalwart defensive record this year. I believe it's only the two shutouts this year against DC and Orlando. Unless I'm mistaken, which I very well could be. defensively, what do New England bring to the table here? Obviously, they conceded the goals this past weekend as well. What can Crew SC do to unsettle the back line of the Revolution?
Keep those crosses going in. New England's shown that they're susceptible to the cross and to headed goals inside the box. They had issues against the likes of Chicago even. So I think that should be the game plan for Crew SC. They're going to be packing the middle as much as possible, New England will, but stretch them out. They play that diamond in midfield, so it can be done. If you stretch them out, you can play through the center and then maybe get wide for the cross and send those in. And I think Columbus has a good chance of getting a lot of goals because this New England defense is not too great.
Getting the ball wide and crossing it in has kind of always been a key feature of any Greg Berhalter team here for the Crew. With two games coming up this next week, Saturday and then Wednesday, this is the first time we've had two games in a week this season. Greg has rotated the team some, but usually it's been by necessity. With a glut of wingers, who do you expect to be out there on the wings for the team this weekend?
I think it's probably going to be the same as we've seen. I imagine it's going to be Finley and Merrim. I don't see him changing that.
Even though Hansen's got a couple of starts under his belt this year, and he's been used as kind of a speed merchant to stretch the game, as you said?
Sure. Well, I think that, unfortunately for him, I think that if they're looking for speed, they would go the route of Kukudamane. However, I think, like I said last week, that he's going to go with tried and trusted and faithful in Ethan Finley.
You know, I think you're probably right about that. I think if anything, we're going to see more rotation on the Wednesday night game against Toronto. Artur, for those of you who have been asking, and we have had people asking, he's not back to full training as of Tuesday. Anyway, I have not been to training since then. He was running off to the side, Greg said, when he's able to start doing things with the ball without having any residual pain in his wrist. He will be back in there, Greg said. It is definitely a possibility that he could be back before the end of the homestand. You guys know Greg Berhalter's record with the media as well as I do. Take that for what you will. But in all likelihood, it'll be Abu and Trapp in the center of the park because there really aren't many other options there. So I guess what's the key matchup going to be here? Do you think the Crew are going to be focusing more on what they can do offensively or what they can do defensively? If you had to pick out one matchup to watch for this upcoming match, what would it be?
I would say it's going to be in the midfield because, as I said, we've seen issues with defensive transition, and the transition has been something that New England has done very well. So it's going to be the likes of Fagundes, Kellen Rowe, and Wynn in the middle. Can Abu and Trapp do enough between themselves to shut those three down? So the question will be, can Abu and Trapp do enough going forward to keep Rowe and Fagundes pinned back where they can't counter as easily?
That worries me because we have not seen Abu and Trapp on the same page enough for me to have any sort of confidence in that. Abu has taken a lot of flack, and rightfully so. He's had some sketchy-looking moments out there. I don't think he's inherently a bad player. I just don't think he's settled into what he's been asked to do here. But the idea that this game could live or die by how Abu and Trapp handle three very good attacking midfield-type players, it worries me. And I just don't know how I see this one going.
Yeah, I'm not sure either, especially after the NYCFC match. There's a lot of question marks with this team.
You know, one thing I will say is that nobody I talked to, nobody I saw in training this week seemed okay with the result. Everyone seemed pretty fiery about it.
Sure.
They realized that there was a real opportunity there, and you would hope that that would lead to a response, a positive response on the field and answering. for predictions, I don't know enough about this New England team. I haven't seen them play enough to really make that educated of a guess. So it's more of a gut feeling here. But I could see this one being a 2-2 draw is what I'm going to go with. And I'm not really thrilled about that because I feel like 6 points are kind of a must here.
I'm going to go with 1-1. I think it's the first time I've probably predicted such a low-scoring match.
It is.
And while New England's defense isn't great, I don't think that their offense is cohesive enough to really put up points away against this Columbus team. I think that Columbus should do a decent enough job shutting them down defensively, but this Columbus team needs to be better in converting these chances. As we saw against NYCFC, there's a lot of wasted chances, particularly at the end of the first half.
Yeah, slow starts and wasted chances is kind of the two big storylines to keep an eye on for this Crew team over the next two games. I don't believe we will be back for a massive match day before the Toronto game. The flagship podcast will be handling that, so tune into that. It should be up Monday night, Tuesday morning for those knuckleheads to give you what passes for analysis. I kid because I love... thanks, as always, to our sponsors, Land Grant Brewing Company and the Old North Arcade. Everyone, get out to the stadium, support the team this week. They need it. And stay tuned for more from us here at Massive Match Day. If you have questions, send them to us. I am at Chris Landis on Twitter. He is at Glory2Columbus. We're trying to get a kind of middle segment of answering some questions, and no one's sending them to us. So send us some questions, please.
Do it.
And do it, exactly. So, everybody get out, enjoy the game, stay safe, and we will see you for our next episode. Stay massive.